Mahesh, thank you for coming back again, and let's take away part two. How much of what you would like to see Hong Kong do now depends on the chief executive, which I have always thought should be called the governor, not the governor, the mayor. The mayor, it would sound better, chief executive. It's too corporate.
There are many branches of our government in Hong Kong, and there was a change in LegCo, which the patriotism aspect was it to reduce the filibustering and the time that was wasted. And now today you have each LegCo member two motions that they're allowed to make per annum. And it's created a better structure moving forward. It stops bottlenecks and allows things to happen. Now, the problem I feel is that we become a little too granulated in the silos that we live in. So there was a fantastic gentleman I learned this from who's a physicist and a psychologist. Yes, philosophy. And I listened to him and he said, look, the problem is that when you have a certain structure, you're always looking at how to make it more robust and make it a little bit more sturdy and sustainable for the future. And while we're doing that, we forget about the future in terms of creativity. And I use creativity in a very absolute loose term, that there are many things that we can do. So we talk about Hong Kong's branding and its image, and we see our Invest HK flying around the world, making, causing to companies to come in. And I just wonder, where's the private sector leading to that voice piece? And what is our message when we go out? I had visits from Abu Dhabi government who came to Hong Kong, said, look, I meet individuals, but I don't hear the collective story. And I just don't know, when they introduce me to China, what's that self-interest? I want to have a platform where I can see China from an open, unbiased point of view and then make my own decision. So I asked them, please open up your office in Hong Kong, and then we'll bring the professionals, who are ethnic minorities, by the way, to be able to guide you with the Chinese look, the outside to inside perspective. So we have issues that we look at things saying, okay, look, we need to focus on China's development that's taking place. I opened an office in Shanghai to deal with certain trade aspects. And they tell me, look, we do have rules and regulations. We do have ways that you have to perform. So tell me how many invoices you're going to issue this month and every month, right? I said, well, if it's four, I state four, but I do five. They say, oh, you have to put in an application. It's a process. And I say, but in Hong Kong, we issue as many invoices as we want, from $1 to $1 billion, right? And it's invoiced anytime we want to do. There's no restriction. And he said, you should love that. You should be grateful for what Hong Kong has given you, the ability for a structure that is regulated for you to be able to have the freedom to develop and grow. And it's not watched or managed by national interest. This is what Hong Kong presents to us. It's that freedom, that capability that we're actually able to explore. So let's explore it. Let's use that creative mindset and explore that and staying within the regulation. But as regulation tightens, what regulation are we looking at? We now have national security law, which I love. Don't get me wrong, we never had it. And I think it's the best thing that could ever happen. But it's here. It's 3 years. It's done. Let's move on. Let's move on to the next big thing. What is our focus? So we create bond connects, we create stock market exchange, connects financial throughput. That system works. We need to upgrade our systems. We need to make a few adjustments here and there in the way that the financial aspect. So we took in blockchain and we said regulate it and make it work. And today the real world assets, which are tokenized, Hong Kong's become a huge hub for this. Dubai is doing it, right? We see that happening in UAE. Hong Kong's doing it, so we become that link. Let's amplify that link on the basis of collaboration. How do we work with our partners and friends from overseas rather than creating a bifurcation in terms of a geopolitical geofence activity? And that's the problem. What is mine, and what is yours, I don't care anymore because I'm stronger. So U.S. innovation, I talk with the Chinese. I say, hey, you guys are accused of stealing things, okay, or borrowing, right? So the interesting difference is that China, for them to feel confident, they want to see the 0-1 aspect. That means the creativity that leads to development, that there is a true market potential. They will look at that and then build on that. So I said, so you're the 1-10, is it? Are you joking? We're 1 to infinity. So once we start, there's no stopping. Now, if I recognize, if we can recognize that potential in China, that mindset of growth and development, Hong Kong needs to be able to provide that utility that allows the world to see it. And that's where our marketing of our brand, that's where our connectivity, our Belt and Road Initiative, how do we then make sure that that conduit is robust and strong and remains impartial to geopolitical rifts? No matter what the U.S. wants to throw at us, we can build that connectivity, should be sustainable and robust to map with the rest of the world. Now, if we look at geography of growth sectors, global north, global south. Global south has a huge potential for growth. If I look at China and I say there's this northeast to southeast corridor of China has developed, the rail network, the communications, all of that. We haven't looked at yet the northwest and south and the middle part of China. And that potential for growth is significant.
Yeah.
And we have to look at that as part of the country. We look at outside Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines. The potential for growth in this area is phenomenal.
Well, it always has been, but it never happens.
And these are the structures of ASEAN. And if we look at Hong Kong and China's relationship, China being strong, Hong Kong being the gateway, we can actually help and assist them,
yeah.
Right? But stay out of the politics. And perhaps if the political mindset changes from personal gain to collective, maybe there'll be growth. Singapore's demonstrated this. They did a wonderful job of 2 million people to now 5 million people. And they've created a system that is continuing to grow. It's remarkable on 300 square kilometers of land.
Singapore is a remarkable story.
Story. And who was it? It was one person, one man who created that vision and that foresight to say, how do we create sustainability?
Short of having our own Lee Kuan Yew, is it better, as some people suggest, that the Hong Kong government actually just keeps quiet and lets the Hong Kong people do its thing? Or would you prefer to see more intervention? Because listening to you, it sounds like there might be an argument for more intervention from the government in terms of promotion.
No, it's not what I'm saying.
Stay out then.
I think Hong Kong needs to come together to understand who we are and what we are.
What role does the government play in that then?
Regulation. Creating the pathways, the path that we can move forward.
Don't they exist already?
They do. But are we looking?
Right. Circular argument.
Yeah, it comes in. And we need to look at this and stop thinking about how quickly I can get my money back. And this is something, of course, we all look at.
Yeah.
Hong Kong's not a cheap place. It's expensive.
And we always did that, by the way.
We've always looked at investments for returns on those investments. But I tell you, how many brands, hotel brands, hospitality brands, do you think Hong Kong has created that become multinational or global?
I don't know, but I hear the best ones Holiday Inn.
Well, of course.
For listeners that don't know.
But what have I said to you? There are 23 brands that came out of Hong Kong.
Is that right?
That went multinational or global.
They started here.
Started.
Give me a couple.
Well, let's look at Rosewood as an example. They bought the brand from the U.S., brought back to Hong Kong, and then built that structure of Rosewood. Now they have 20 hotels and partnerships and 20 hotels. Shangri-La moved from Malaysia, came to Hong Kong. Hong Kong is HQ. How many hotels do they have?
They're all over.
Hundreds.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Peninsula.
Yeah.
Mandarin. Yeah.
Goodness, you're right.
If we look at all these brands that were created in Hong Kong.
Was the Mandarin first here? Yes.
Yes. Peninsula first.
The Bangkok, the Oriental Peninsula. Was the Oriental and the Mandarin, the management company.
Mandarin is Hong Kong land, right?
Yeah.
Which is Jardines.
Right.
Right. So Jardines has been here for 150 years.
Right.
If you look at Swire, similar in that historical relevance to Hong Kong, there were Hong Kong companies until 97 and things shifted. But I think they're still here. They're ubiquitous in Hong Kong. We don't look at them and say, oh, this is Jardines, this is Swire, and therefore we should or should not. Right?
Yeah.
They are Hong Kong brands. They took over Taikoo. They've taken over a lot of Hong Kong companies and then built that into sustainable enterprises, which is phenomenal and became a model of our existence moving forward.
So on these podcasts, as we've had a number of people talking about this sort of stuff.
Mm.
So the big question eventually for everyone is, we've always had that spirit that you've talked about in the past. We've been written off occasionally and we come bouncing back. There is a doubt, I sense, not with you, by the way, necessarily, but I hear in others a doubt that this time it's going to be quite the same. Now, I suspect that each time there's a crisis, there's a doubt that it's going to be quite the same. I mean, after SARS, people didn't all go out and buy property immediately.
Yeah.
They waited until it started to happen. Is it going to happen this time?
I had this conversation with our financial government division, the FSTB.
Yep.
And the Hong Kong Economics Department. I had this very conversation. Yeah, Hong Kong's transient. People come, people go. But I also recognize that we do have a population of 7.4 million people, 7.5 now, right? Million people that have to live here, don't want to leave, or are born and raised and they don't know anywhere else. So we have that population. We have to look at how we can sustain this population and allow it to grow. And I come to this issue of the ethnic minority. It's being used in so many different ways, and it's just taken a very negative turn, even though it's a good identity marker, right? Because we are different ethnicities, and we are a minority population. But that's what's special about Hong Kong. That's what makes it work. But the problem is that there's a lot of negative connotation which has come in by way of crime, criminal activities. They say it's Pakistani, or it's South Indian, or it's a dark-skinned person, and these are people who have come in as asylum seekers sitting in transit in Hong Kong looking for opportunities and jobs, and then they're being used by certain groups to be able to hire them to give them some income, but they're actually performing illicit activities, right? Then you have those like us who are 96 years in Hong Kong, who have come in here as a professional and built their lives. And you have the backpackers in the British Empire that came into Hong Kong, discovered a cheap way of living, started to work and ingrain themselves in life in Hong Kong, and decided this to be their forever home. What happened to all of these people that helped to build Hong Kong's economy at the most transitional period of Hong Kong, where we discovered that Hong Kong became a financial powerhouse, not by design? It wasn't that we planned or created this. It was by accident of providing financial utility to companies in trading.
Well, that touches on something that, again, has been going around my mind as I've listened to you. Because we talk about, and you've been talking about, what needs to be done in order to create a situation where we move forward. But I was thinking this very thing, that if you look back over our history, most of it's accidental. And most of life is accidental. I mean, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
Yeah. That's right.
So when I was listening to this, we all want to find solutions. We want to kickstart Hong Kong. We want to drag it up. And by the way, this could be a conversation we were having in Australia or New Zealand or the United States or England and so on. I mean, I don't know anyone around the world that's bubbling away and thinking it's great. I don't understand why the stock market's so high. But in any event, it just seems to me that in some ways we just want to throw up our hands and go, let it all happen. Let's not worry about it. Just let government be quiet and we'll get on with it and Hong Kong will do what it always does versus too much oversight and trying to make... I mean, it always sounds rather weak when you push yourself forward. Just let it happen. How about that for a thought?
Well, I agree with everything you just said. It can happen anywhere and everywhere in the world. But the difference is the mindset of the Asian mindset versus the Western mindset and the way that I think this comes back to a historical relevance, and it's education that also has something to do with it.
Yep.
And education's not just in school of Western books of the way that we're taught, but it's a cross-regional understanding. As we study geography in school in Hong Kong, we can actually name most countries in the world pre-border changes. And I've gone to other countries and I've asked people, like, do you know where North Korea is, for example? And they'll point at Mexico because, you know, of that potential threat to that environment. So it has to be close by mindset. It has to be in our doorstep.
Quite often we get mistaken for Japan.
Well,
in the West.
When I went to university in the US in the 1980s, and they asked me, so Mahesh, where are you from? And I say, from Hong Kong. Ah, so you speak Japanese.
Exactly.
I say, well, I don't know how you knew that. Because of my numerous trips to Japan as a child. But no, we don't speak Japanese. We speak Chinese. How do you speak Chinese? Isn't Hong Kong in Japan? So anyway, that story aside, I think if we come back to what you're saying in terms of regulation and government oversight, Hong Kong's always been laissez-faire. Let's go with that. non-government intervention, non-government involvement,
yep.
free enterprise, and grow and develop. But we've had regulations in place that make sure that the guardrails don't go too far in excess of behavior or aspects of trust and invasion of, I would say, creating a negative mindset of doing business in Hong Kong, that we're all crooks and we're all here to take advantage, and therefore you erode that element that Hong Kong worked so hard to create. We're a trustworthy port. We're a port of call for trust. When you come in, I don't mean structure in terms of a financial instrument. I mean in terms of human behavior and activity, right?
It's a safe city.
It's a safe city in every aspect. So the regulations that come in are necessary to ensure the guardrails of trust maintain. How do we then establish and ensure that that's pushed overseas? And there's two sides to that. There are two ways to do it. The government goes out and says, come and open up in Hong Kong. You're in a safe environment. The other side is for the business people, the travelers, as well as Hong Kong's backpackers now going outward to say, come to my city. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
We got dim sum and char siu. Come over.
What could be better?
Well, unless you're just promoting the night market at Fishballs, and we can't just keep promoting that. We've got to talk about the other attributes.
Yeah.
And let me ask you this, Jonathan. What do you think makes Hong Kong significantly different from any other city in the world?
Well, we could go for a long list of those.
Give me five.
Oh, goodness. You're making me work for my...
Yeah, you've been asking me.
So... Well, okay, I'll have a
go. Give me three.
I'll have a go at three. Let's have a go at three. Yeah. Well, first of all, I think it's an extraordinary place to do business, particularly from a tax point of view. It's a big plus.
Okay.
Two, it's very devoid of racism. So that's the ethnic bit again. I mean, there is an acceptance generally, ordinarily, of all races here. Thirdly, well, it's a beautiful split between East and West. Nowhere's quite as inviting of both parts of the world. The East meets West best in Hong Kong. Three.
And I think you just summed all those three into one aspect. We're a global city.
We're a global city, and we mustn't forget it.
We cannot and should not.
And mainland China doesn't want us to forget it. I won't breach confidences, but there are signs at the moment that locally we've really got it. They know that we need to remain very, very diverse.
I do argue this in private to friends and the corporations in Hong Kong, is that we cannot just look at Hong Kong into China. We have to look at China outwards.
Yeah.
And there is a huge cultural difference between behavior in China and behavior in Hong Kong of Chinese people. That cultural influence is hugely significant. Mainland Chinese have gone to America, they've been educated in America, they come back to China.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, the society compresses you into a certain expectation of behavior, right? Yep. Hong Kong has society pressures in many different ways. And our behavior is global, so there's no one right and there's no one wrong, right?
Mm.
Unless you go out and you hit somebody and perform a criminal act or cancel me in many different ways. But that's not the collective, right? Hong Kong is really a universal city. It's universal. We'll talk to Africans, we'll talk to the West, we'll talk to every country in the world, the Central Asian, we'll talk to the US, we'll talk to South America, and we'll do business in every facet that we can find. Now, it's a behavioral thing. We look at one religion, I would say, that Hong Kong has, and that's the dollar sign. It's not about God or deity, but it's a dollar sign. But the dollar sign has those attributes that surround it, which is faith, which is spirituality, which is God, which is country, which is children and continuity, legacy development. Other countries, I don't know if I feel that. I don't feel that connection. You can say, okay, look, I'm going to a Christian country, or I can say I'm going to an Islamic country and I go somewhere else. And that becomes your behavior. But Hong Kong, is that universal adapter? And I've said this to people in China, I've said it to people internationally. Hong Kong is that universal adapter. You come in with a British plug, that's three-pronged, which is a Hong Kong thing. You go to China, we help you to convert it into a two-prong adapter. If you come from America, two-prong is different from the Chinese two-prong. So we'll help you to create that adapter environment through the professional services and through the regulation that's been established in Hong Kong.
I like the analogy, the electric adapter, the plug.
We are. We are the plug.
Can I speak for a moment about the elephant in the room?
Sure.
At the time of the transition, the handover, 1997, the discussions between the two sides envisaged a national security law. Roughly 160 countries around the world have that piece of legislation. They look vaguely the same around the world. Mm. The British side thought it was a good idea, and I gather the Chinese side thought it was a good idea. And it was only pressure of time that stopped it being introduced.
It's now cried 2003.
Yeah, but this is earlier.
Yeah.
It was accepted that Hong Kong would do well to have a national security agreement. That's my understanding. I wasn't part of it, but those that were tell me that was the plan.
Yeah.
And then, as we know, eventually it was introduced, and it was introduced really because of 2019 and the social unrest.
Yeah.
And the riots and the perceived and possibly correct assumption that there was outside influence as well.
Correct.
So it became law, and there was a lot of anxiety surrounding it. And then you had the double whammy of 2019 and the riots, and then the COVID.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a good period for us or the world.
No.
Now, when I go, as I often do, to Spain, and I ask where I come from, I say, well, I come from Spain a bit and Hong Kong. Mm. And everyone used to say for years and years, whoa, my favorite city. Yeah. Fabulous. I love Hong Kong. I get people say, yeah, you were in Hong Kong, but where are you now? And I'm in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But it's not safe.
Sure.
So then you spend half your lunch explaining to the people in the next table why you're still in Hong Kong, that it is safe and it's not the way the Western press present it. Okay, but the elephant still remains in the room because you and I know the truth, and most people in Hong Kong know the truth. But in the Western world, because of the Western press, which is so often misleading, we're perceived as somewhere where you can't go out for a coffee without looking over your shoulder and expecting to get arrested. As much as we can talk about all the facets of Hong Kong that are saleable, all that is good here, and the fact is that we're getting more IPOs here now at the moment than ever before, with a big, so on. So there is a shift, and people are coming back in. Long-haul flights have increased, I think, about 15% in the last month.
Sure.
It's happening. But the difficulty we seem to have is shaking off the perception that somehow national security law has caused everyone to be fearful, when in fact, the likes of you and I find it that it helped settle the place down.
Yeah.
So we agree on all of that so far, but what do we do to kick the elephant out of the room?
Stop screaming that out with a bullhorn every time a microphone is placed in front of you. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
It's in place. We get it.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that earlier.
Yes.
That we have national security law in place. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the other attributes. Let's talk about the other aspects of growth and development and future foresight. And I just brought up one element of this new space economy as one of the mechanisms that we can use to start talking and sharing with the world that Hong Kong's the financial capital to help you in structuring and developing your financial returns and foresight.
Yeah.
So that's just one.
Yes.
The other aspect we don't talk about is the number of international schools that exist in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
All coming here. I mean, albeit the prices are ridiculous. But
they are everywhere, Mahesh.
they are. But I think there's something else to do with that. And I think our government education system needs to be tweaked for the local people. There's a language.
I was going to mention language,
because
I know that's an issue that you're concerned about.
I am hugely concerned that when I talk to my counterparts in China, and I see that a lot of them try to learn English so that they can understand. And English is not difficult because there's no real hidden nuance unless you really get to that professional level. Whereas Chinese characters do have that hidden nuance because it's a 3,000, 4,000-year-old culture that has language created through the Oracle Bone script. And I'm saying that in the education system, we boil things down to memorization and we don't allow for creative thinking, for pre-processing or understanding. And the problem with that, it occupies a lot of headspace. Time and headspace that you have to memorize and memorize and memorize, that you forget about creativity and you forget about playing and enjoyment, and that your grades then have to reflect the time to grade return, that return on investment has to come forward, and therefore you get into the better schools, and then from better schools you have a better life, and a better life means more money, right? So we come back to the money equation.
As always.
International schools here are mandated to have 70% international, 20-30% of local students. But you also find that in the school population today, that 70, 80% at the time where I went was mixed culture. Today, if I walk into the school, I'll find it's maybe 80% Chinese, but just with different passports. And the same thing in our universities as well, right? Which is great that we give a close, proximate avenue to the Chinese connection to have this.
Yeah.
But we need to open that up a little bit more. Now, we have the government schools. When we talk about us, the ethnic minority, we have designated government schools, which are costing the government a huge amount of money. But the results, the ROI, and someone mentioned this the other day, was the social ROI. SROI was a very important element. New word I learned, and I love it, is actually something that's going to hurt us in the future, as the ethnic minority that are unable to learn Chinese or have achieved their grades in Chinese five-star, and I'm hosting these kids, these young people, the future generations of Hong Kong, if they don't have the job and the ability to earn income where they're stuck within $12,000, $22,000 range, that they just don't have the ability to grow outside of that hard cemented ceiling, it's going to cost our government a lot more money in the future. Because they are residents of Hong Kong, born and raised.
Yeah.
Welfare is going to cost, medical care is going to cost. And then when they have children, as the ethnic minorities have more children than local Chinese people do, and they grasp this data that points at that, it's going to cost Hong Kong a lot of money if we don't create that availability of jobs, that availability of outcome that they wish to pursue. And we can't call them as expats because they're born in Hong Kong. They probably have a Hong Kong passport. They certainly have a Hong Kong permanent ID card, Hong Kong passport. And why is it that we're not looking at keeping them ingrained with Hong Kong's philosophy, which is multicultural? It's diverse. It's open to new thoughts and ideas, although some of them are going through LegCo at the moment for debate. But we do have to look at this population and say, look, how do we ensure that they're part of it? So these kids, and I call them kids, but they're actually very brilliant and smart.
Yeah.
That they learn Chinese with one hand tied behind their backs because it's not their cultural language. It's not home language. It's not the environment, community language, that they still pursued and actively went through this. Only to apply for a job where the company will say to them, hey, you're not Hong Kong enough or you're not Chinese enough. I mean, we have those companies that still exist today.
Mm.
And I don't talk about the multinationals. I talk about the local companies. Local companies that have that trajectory of growth, whether it's a hockey stick trajectory or it's whether it's a mandated 8 to 12% return on investment, you still need that outward look. You can't just be totally isolated and constrained to just what is a Chinese thought, because they are Chinese, they learned the language, they understand the philosophy, went through the education system, and they are in every aspect as Hong Kong as you expect them to be, but just different colored skin. Why are we not providing those opportunities?
Yeah.
Why do we restrict it? Why is the news? Wow, every time you read something about ethnic minority, it's always a negative story.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are we not encouraging and developing that growth and the utility and availability that instead of hiring offshore workers to come in, why are we not looking at our local environment to see them work? It's a fabulous place. It's a wonderful place. And there's one more thing I'd like to propose, if I could. People talk about digital nomads, the people who travel around the world, build their social platform, work on digital media for wealth. In the past in Hong Kong, we allowed backpackers to come in. We were a British colony, we understand that. And in that discovery of Hong Kong, they fell in love with the city and said, wow, this is somewhere I want to be. And we still do have facets of that activity, but it's not a traveler that's coming in on a tourist visa. You have to be sponsored by a corporation. You have to be hireable. You have to go through all of those different attributes of government requirements before you're entitled to receive that sponsorship visa. But what if we allow people to come in who have 90-day visas or 30 days and fall in love with the city and make a declaration to our government, IRD, and immigration, I want to work. And you know what? If we give them a visa, okay, you are committed to paying a 20% tax for the first year. If you renew after next year, you pay 19 or 18% tax. After the second year, you find people fall in love with this city. It's just fantastic. Freedom of movement, mobility, and availability. How do you then say, go away? You don't. You say, okay, after second year, you make a declaration, you want to stay, we'll normalize you to a normal person, and we'll give you the starting goal of that ID card 7 years from now, right? Why don't we look at a platform that creates this differential tax bracket? Now, if I say to the government, create this tax bracket specialty for the backpackers, and you say, no, we don't have this, then I'll point out the family offices that you establish that as long as they meet a mandate of $100 million, you're giving them a reduced tax. Why are we doing this and not for the higher tax part of it? And create that opportunity. You can reverse it. Backpackers come in. We encourage you to stay if you have certain qualifications. You pay only 10% tax. Second year, you pay 12%. And then after third year, when you make that declaration, we charge you that 16%. Why are we not doing this?
Are you optimistic?
If someone's listening, like today.
The platform today.
And I mentioned it to government. I mentioned to a few people. But yeah. There's a lot of work that Hong Kong government needs to do. There's a lot of challenges that they face. And when you're facing the challenges and you're relying on empirical past data, you're not thinking forward. You got to look at that and understand what's happened in the past. How do we ensure that we maintain that and not change the basket that which we look at as our measurement, but look at how we can create sustainable growth and development in Hong Kong? And I'm saying there are other ways. That's a creative way. I could be wrong, but it is a thought. Why are we not sharing those thoughts and letting somebody run with it? I'm not looking for that accolade. I'm not looking for that reward. Take it, run, go forward, empower, and make sure that Hong Kong population in that competitive environment will grow with new opportunity.
Well, there are a lot of people, Mahesh, that we know, you and I, who are out there and wanting Hong Kong to succeed again. Actually, that's not quite right, because it hasn't failed. It's just that we know there is better to come.
Yeah.
That like so many places around the world, it's difficult times.
But it's the longest period of long that we've had.
Yeah. And
uncertainty.
And low property prices are always an indication of a region in difficulties. You don't have good times with depressed property prices, I'm told.
If we expect property prices to rise on a CAGR of 28% and it's just a surefire way of making money, what happens to you as a business person? You buy a property, it goes on value, you borrow against that, you buy another property, it goes on value because it's sustained, guaranteed growth. 28% per annum over 20 years.
Yeah.
It makes you lazy.
Yeah.
It makes you complacent. And that expectation to say, when you actually face a crisis, how do you deal with it? What happens with it? And then you become a hoarder. Oh, my rents can go up, I'm guaranteed. If you look at our shopping malls, and I want to come back to this point.
Yeah.
You talk about flights coming in, growing long-haul flights coming at 15%.
Something like that.
And we've got, what, 50 million people going through our airport.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who was flying in from Canada said to me, Mahesh, I'm flying to Hong Kong and I'm going to Vietnam after I go to Hong Kong.
Right.
I said, what's in Vietnam for you? So I've never seen it. And by the way, the flights were 30% cheaper for me to fly via Hong Kong on a Hong Kong airline to Vietnam than it was point-to-point Toronto-Hong Kong return. It was 30% cheaper for me to add an additional destination.
How odd, yeah.
So we talk about the transit in Hong Kong airport. How does that lead to consumptive expense environment in Hong Kong? Where's our consumption?
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Then when you walk around our malls, other than the beautiful K11, it's the same shops.
Yes.
It's the same cookie cutter environment.
Yeah.
When I walk into one, if you take me blindfolded, I'll say it's the same shopping mall.
Same thing. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's cookie cut to the thing because the return on investment aspect is a guaranteed return. So we can raise our rents and we raise it and raise it annually. Inflation is through 2.35%, or we can raise it 6% because demand is very hot. But if you don't sustain that consumption, that demand, as we've seen in Causeway Bay, has completely fallen apart.
Collapsed.
It's a nuclear bomb in Causeway Bay. We just all outpriced ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're happy that we have these $25 shops that open up for food. And that operates at 18 hours a day. And you're having these $25 two plus one meals and Chow Tan Tangs. What happened to our quality of Michelin, non-Michelin, aspirational restaurants and F&B environment that we had?
Yeah.
And we had 270 closed down, but we say, oh, we should be happy 269 are opening up. And I'm saying, what's the quality that we're offering on the 269? It's Cha Tan Teng and 2 plus 1s. which is great. It's a new feeding environment, but you can't have it side by side by side by side in every environment. Where's the culture? Where's that vision? That when we look at a harbor and we say, what a beautiful, stunning sight Hong Kong is, the vision that was created that we can enjoy and feast on every day and embrace and be grateful for. Then to walk on the streets and only see these cheap shops that are opening up. How does that lead to Hong Kong culture? How can we say that fish balls at $3 a fish ball is going to sustain our economy? It doesn't add anything to our taxable income. So we need to create that other element, right? And I made a proposition, if I may.
Go ahead.
More.
Yes, please.
Kai Tak Cruise Terminal.
Yeah.
And this actually was someone who works at a hotel, a general manager for a hotel. So I have a brilliant vision. Why don't we convert Kai Tak Cruise Terminal into a made in Hong Kong retail environment with all Hong Kong attributes? The food, the cottage industries of development of brands and creativity of product, clothing, whatever it may be. Not these trinket shops that you find that are owned by mainland Chinese, but Hong Kong created industries. And let's anchor it with a Bruce Lee Museum interactive AI, AR video film. And the other side with the music, the Canto Pop side of it, and create that immersive experience that does two things. One, tourists coming in on those cruise ships now have a place to stay, work, function with the hotels nearby and sports stadium. And you also have a place where Hong Kong people don't need to go to Shenzhen every weekend, can come in and embrace Hong Kong's own culture respectfully, lovingly, and share it with the world.
What does it take for it to happen? Is it government?
I don't know. We've got to talk to who owns that. Which is government, right? Who manages it?
I mean, we've talked before on this podcast about the extraordinary coastline that you're talking about that we have just down the road from here.
Yeah.
Between here and, say, a convention center. But there's no outlets on it.
Nothing.
It's just a piece of pavement.
It's dining options where we have thousands of dining options.
We've got one of the great coastlines. And it's barren.
And there's nothing there. Talk about the West Kowloon Cultural District as well. And there are many thoughts with that. Instead of having an open walkway, you should have done something a little bit more sheltered so that people during inclement weather conditions can actually access, right? Be able to move around and enjoy that environment and enjoy the food and beverage. And Kai Tak Stadium.
We're going to sound as if we know it's all. And we know what should be done. But the fact of the matter is, you are expressing the frustration and the desire wrapped in one to make sure that Hong Kong prospers.
Absolutely.
And that's it.
And we'll come to that, right? I mean, let me just wrap up some of the things you said. Is it us, the private sector, or is it the government?
Yeah.
The private sector has to move forward. And I can paint many different layers in this as well, is in our startup environment, it's a risk investment. How do we get that to become non-risk? How do we get that mentorship, that growth entity? How do we get the EYs, PCWs, PWCs, and everybody else to come in and say, here's how we're going to frame it and identify those risk structures and move forward and create that startup environment? Now, the problem with Hong Kong is that it's a small demographic playground for you to test and don't have to do it expensively. Do it as a cheap place. The second aspect is that Hong Kong then becomes a springboard to the global south in taking that tested environment and moving forward. That 0-1 initiative Hong Kong can have, should have, backed by our universities, backed by our youth, creating a global playground for it to work on. When was the last time we had a unicorn in Hong Kong?
Tell me.
Yeah, I don't.
So long ago, we don't recall.
I've grown a few gray hairs thinking about it, right? And we rest on the laurels of the past, but we don't look at how we create culture for the future. Yeah. And how do we create that environment? So let's go. Let's make it happen. Private sector. Let's look at this. Look at Hong Kong, not the fast track ROI. Look at Hong Kong to create that sustainability. And you'll find that the city is magnificent in regulation, structure, intelligence, culture.
Bahesh Harilela, I'm going to leave you to build it. Look, it's been great fun having you here. I hope the listeners enjoy listening to you as much as I've enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Well, if we may, we'll invite you again. There's a lot to be said.
There's a lot that we can do. I don't know who's talking, how much talking. I've talked far too much already, but we just need the people with the initiatives to power this forward. And yeah. Hong Kong is a great place. I can't take ownership, but I'm available to be part of this and create this group that actually looks at the vision of Hong Kong moving forward. And let's have those conversations with the government, because some of us have those doors open.
Yeah.
Let's keep those doors active and participate with a bilateral conversation to allow it to go.
Mahesh, keep those doors open. Thank you so much.
Thank you.